Welcome to Integrate This, your go-to EdTech podcast where curiosity meets classroom innovation. Join your hosts, David Berner and Jeremy Mikla, as we explore the rapidly evolving world of educational technology. From game-changing tools to insightful conversations with today's top EdTech voices, we're here to help educators stay informed, inspired, and ready to innovate. So tune in, level up, and let's integrate this.
Welcome and thank you for joining us for the Integrate This EdTech podcast. I'm Jeremy Mikla and I am joined by co-host David Berner. And we are delighted to be joined by our special guest here today, whether it's this afternoon for us or whenever you're listening to this, it could be morning, who knows. We are joined by Rochelle Denet-Poth. Rochelle has a long history in education as well as several other endeavors that she's been a part of, and it brings a wealth of knowledge, I think, to the spheres of education, education technology, and even some other background that I kind of want us to kick off by, you know, thinking about or having you share, you know, kind of some of your journey, Rochelle. How did you get into the field of education? You know, if you want to weave in some of the other detours that you've definitely had as part of your experience, you know, like give us a little bit about who you are, your background.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for having me join you both today. I'm always excited to be a guest on a podcast or to have guests on my podcast. So I'm going to have both of you on mine as well and, you know, flip the switch a little bit. But yeah, so I have quite an interesting journey throughout my career in education, but I will say that I didn't always know that I wanted to be a teacher. Like when I was in college, I remember, and I've told this story quite often, I remember being called into my guidance counselor's office, probably the start of my junior year. And they said, you know, you kind of need to declare a major. And I said, but I did. And they said, well, we don't have it in the paperwork because, you know, it was a while ago. They said, what is it? And I said, liberal arts. And they said, that's not a major. That's like the entire, like the school of. And I said, oh yeah, I want to major in all of it. Just everything that you offer in that school, that's what I want to have. But I do come from a family of educators in varying roles and always loved playing school. I loved school when I was a kid. So they suggested that I give education a try. Because I asked them quite frankly, well, what am I good at? And it was a little bit of a limited list based on my, you know, academic performance at college. I didn't, you know, perform poorly, but my strengths were in speaking and learning French. And so I went into that, graduated, couldn't get a job teaching just French. So I substitute taught for 3 years, got my degree in Spanish. Then I got a job full-time teaching French and Spanish. And after about 5 years of teaching full-time, I decided that I wanted to go to law school. And fortunately in Pittsburgh, one of the two law schools offers an evening program. So I joke and say, like students tend to think, I was literally living in a school during the day and for 4 years, 4 nights a week. But that was 19 years ago. I graduated. I'm still an attorney, still an educator. And in that time, also got a master's degree in instructional technology and just got my doctorate last year just because I love learning. And the last thing that I'll say is I truly would not still be in education doing what I'm doing today had it not been for taking that risk and going to law school and just seeing the role of an educator so differently and the importance of relationships and mentoring. And it really did change who I was and who I was for my students. So I'm just always looking for more opportunities to learn and, you know, live in school.
Well, I don't think you should feel too bad about your journey and wanting to be a liberal arts major. I did have a friend I went to college with, I won't say how many years ago, but he took a little bit longer route than say I did. And I thought my 5 years was a long time. Mm-hmm. But my friend Matt took 8 years. And when he was done, he graduated with an elective studies degree. So they have created like some sort of route that a person could take and they just learn a whole bunch of different stuff. And then finally they say, we don't want your money anymore. You just need to leave.
Oh my, that's hilarious. Oh, an elective study. Okay. Good to know.
I like to point that out to people when they take the long approach to their education journey anyway. But so you also touched on, you've kind of gotten into that, you know, that you've got the background in being a world language teacher. You talked about, you know, the exploring the legal profession. But what drew you into educational technology, and what kind of led you to explore that? And you know, if you are watching us, you can see that Rochelle has a book over her shoulder that is How to Teach with AI. So I do realize that, you know, it's an important part of the way that you teach, right?
It is. And I, you know, truth be told, the thing that has always drawn me into anything related to technology was my childhood, just the fascination. And we didn't really have a lot. I mean, we had technology, but we didn't have things like we have today, of course. And for me, the course that I created and I've taught for like 9 years, STEAM, What's Next in Emerging Technology, for eighth graders, it's so fascinating because I love seeing what is available to them now at their age and think back to when I was their age and how different things were, of course, back then, and share some of my experiences with them. But I've always enjoyed technology, the benefits, and then even probably 15 years ago, we weren't one-to-one in my school. Not a lot of students had their own cell phones. So I would take my students into the computer lab. I would give them a paper printout of websites to go to, which of course you couldn't tell if it was a capital I, an L, the number one or something. So they couldn't get to the site. Eventually that worked itself out because I was able to share it with them digitally. But I've just been fascinated by, you know, in my role as a language educator, the different ways I can get students to engage with the content that they're learning and what they can use, or how they can use, I should say, the different technologies. And this is even before all of the AI, to create different projects and products of their learning that really gave them a lot of choices. And so it has helped me to kind of expand the way that I was teaching for many years, like when I was in high school in French and then in college courses. I didn't really have a lot in terms of like methodology for teaching practices. So a lot of what I did when I first started teaching was how I had learned as a student. I just transferred that over. I'm like, oh, worked for me. It's going to work for everybody else. And then I soon realized like it didn't. And then that's when I started bringing more technology to my class. And it's not always, I mean, obviously it's not all about the tech, but having those different opportunities where students learn about different technologies, they build the language skills, which I say to them, we need language educators, we need teachers in general, but giving them a chance to be creative and have fun and attach more meaning to it because they've made that choice. So I've just tried to amplify that over the years. And then of course, the last 3 years with ChatGPT and all the other great options available with AI, helping students to understand how to use them to enhance their learning, but also learning from them, I think is also important, especially in my STEAM course too. I like to pretend like I don't always know the answer, although sometimes in full transparency, I actually don't know the answer to a question. So it's fun to be vulnerable in that regard with them and let them teach me something as well. So I'm just always excited to learn more and to do more for students as well.
And is there any, I just have to ask kind of a random question, but is there any connection or is there like anything that you've seen as you've gone about using these different AI programs, when the legal pieces start to come in, what are your immediate thoughts or the different things that have come up or just popped into your mind having that background as well?
Yeah. So, well, one thing that I will say is when ChatGPT first came out almost 3 years ago now, there were a lot of people either sending me emails, calling me, showing them at my door, you name it, text messaging, saying like, it's the end of everything. Everybody's going to cheat. All the kids are going to copy. You know, we don't need teachers or anything. I'm like, we were able to copy and get people to do our homework back when I was in school many, many years ago. And those were a lot of issues. But then I started to look at it from a different perspective because of the legal background that I have. And I kind of like started to question things a lot more. I look more closely at the different tools and things I'm using in my classroom. I'm definitely more aware of some of the things we need to be responsible for if we are using some of these tools. Because I think back to 2020 when, you know, everybody's teaching virtually and you're just trying to keep learning going. And all the tools are free, right? Everybody's like, oh, nobody has to pay. Well, everybody just started to use them because you wanted to keep students continuing to learn or to stay connected if you're using some type of collaboration platform or messaging system. And I don't know that a lot of people actually looked at the privacy policies or anything like that back then. We just didn't think about it. We were so focused on like, got to keep school going, got to stay connected with the kids. And then that's kind of the point where I did an audit as part of my work, my studies, and just was surprised at looking at like the last update for their privacy policies. And so I've kind of shifted a little bit and looked more at, are some of these tools, you know, what are they doing with our information? And I joke and I say, like, are you buying, sharing, storing, selling? I have this long list with our information. And then I also have some examples of things that friends, colleagues have said that they've, you know, used AI and different tools for, that I cringe because, like, they don't know that they're not supposed to put certain information in. They didn't realize they need to check something. I mean, there's a lot of other issues, like really big issues out there besides just those ones that come into play. So my brain has been working a little bit overtime in the last couple of years, just trying to look at all of the angles of it and bring everything together. So for me, it's been great because trying to put the, you know, the teacher piece with like the consultant piece and then the attorney piece and the person who loves technology and what can I do with all of those that's going to help somebody else, especially if somebody else is looking to get started with AI and is hesitant or isn't sure which tool to begin with. I always want to try to know enough. I'm not the expert, but know enough that I can help somebody. But it does make me look very closely at things. And I joke and I say, I love the legalese. I love reading all the privacy policies. Like, send them my way, please. So
you're not throwing any in ChatGPT now, just to quick go through them,
I think. I use ChatGPT a lot. And I will say, not for my writing. For anybody that's listening, I don't use it for that. I use it a lot in the training that I do and the work with other teachers and schools, just to test out things. But I have taken some policies and sample writing and agreements and things that I find on different sites. I pull out all of the identifiable information. So it's, you know, company A or platform B, and no locations or anything, just to see what it actually says. And sometimes it, you know, it does come back and say, oh, this is a very well written, you know, strong legal foundation. Or sometimes it says, like, here's where it's lacking. It has this long list of areas. And there are things that I mean, as a human and as an attorney, like, I recognize as well, like, oh yeah, it doesn't say anything about this. And I have advised some different companies on their policies. But I do know that people do go to some of those like ChatGPT or Gemini or any of the other models out there and test it out. And I hope that at the end of the day, if people are using it for that purpose, because we know everybody's using it for something similar, that we still kick in our own like human intuition and analyze it ourselves too.
So what do you say to that teacher then that like, hey, I've got this cool thing, I want to try it out. And I've got the learning objective that I started with, and I found this tool that matches it. So I'm trying to put them in the best scenario possible. Yeah. Not that I just heard at a conference about this tool and I got to try it, but they've got a great learning target and goal in mind. They found a tool that they think is going to help them meet that, and they want to push through and they want to use it tomorrow. Yeah. You know, what do you say to them? Do you tell them, no, wait, put the brakes on here. Let's dive in and let's see what the legalese and that privacy policy says and make sure that it's a suitable tool.
I do. Because I have a lot, I've several stories of things that, you know, didn't really go that well for some people initially because they dove in without the training or without proper guidance. But I do ask those questions. I mean, my first question is always kind of like, okay, well, how is this doing something that's different, that's going to enhance what you're already doing? You know, is it something that usually takes you hours upon hours? Are you out of a lot of ideas that are kind of unique or engaging for your students? And I question the why behind it always. And then I say, did you look at, and I give them a list of a couple of different things to see if they looked at it. And sometimes they have. You know, they look to see and make sure they're in compliance with FERPA, for example, or certain, you know, we're not sharing or selling your information. But I always like to push back on some of those things because about a little over a year and a half ago, I think at this point, I was speaking in Los Angeles at a conference and a woman had said to me, well, this platform said, we don't use your information. Should I trust it? I said, well, no. And she said, well, why not? And I said, well, you don't know what's behind that platform, because if they are taking payments, then there's something that's collecting the payments, collecting information. And does that platform then have access to whatever you're putting into it? So it has been kind of interesting to have conversations with people sometimes. Mm-hmm.
as you look at all these different things that you've mentioned, you have, you know, background in different disciplines. Is there anything that helps connect some of those? Like, as you're thinking about, you know, you're thinking about education, you're thinking about the legal side of things. Is there some natural connectors that just happen in your mind because of the conversations that go on? So like if you're talking about data privacy or whatever it might be, does it just kind of naturally pop into your mind that like, oh, this is something we need to make sure we talk about?
It does sometimes. And usually that's because I've had a conversation with somebody, and I've told the story so often, but it was not long after ChatGPT came out. And I have a colleague, not anybody that I work with, it's somebody that works somewhere else in the United States. And we don't see each other that often, but we were having conversations about ChatGPT. And she kept saying, I'm not going to use ChatGTP. And I kept correcting her. I'm like, it's GPT. And she said, I don't care. I'm not going to use it. I have no use for it whatsoever. And she was working as a special education coordinator with different, you know, student information with IEPs and all of the PDFs full of, you name it, for students over their academic career. And so fast forward to that summer of 2023 now, and we had a little meetup virtually. And she said, guess what? And I said, what? And she said, I use ChatGPT. And first I'm like, she got the name right. And then I said, okay, well, tell me, what did you use it for? And she said, well, I uploaded the PDF of all the information. And I'm like, uh-huh. And she said, then I asked it to write an IEP for fill in the name of the blank, or fill in the name of the student, I should say. And I went, oh, you did now. And I said, well, I'm going to make you a big sandwich. And the sandwich was basically like, great, you used it. But then I filled it up with all of the things that you needed to understand. So I always keep that and some other stories in mind, whether it's from, you know, students that have told me when I've been in, working at schools, and there have been students there and they say, well, I use it for this. And I'm like, well, you don't actually want to use it for that. So those things are always kind of at the front of my mind. And when I hear of stories or, you know, friends are talking about using something, those are always in the back or the front, in this case, I should say, of my mind. So just in case they are going to maybe use it for something, then I can kind of say, like, stop them ahead of time and be proactive rather than reactive for it.
Oh, that's neat. I love your sandwich analogy there. In fact, I remember a methods professor that I had when I was in college that said, okay, you're going to have your first conference with parents that are going to show up and they're going to want to hear what you have to say about their child. And
right.
And he's like, I'm going to give you the foolproof method to make it work. And it's the sandwich model. You know, you start with something that the student does really well, then layer in the things that they need to improve upon, and then end with something, you know, again, positive. And it was,
right.
It's been a good method.
Yeah, like, I agree.
Hey. And I could see how you might choose to use that with a colleague as well, and it would have equal success.
Yeah, and I didn't think about it at the time. It just kind of that evolved and happened naturally as I did that. And I've done a lot of sessions over about the last 2 years now, speaking about AI and the law. And that is one story that I tell. And whenever I tell it in person, I can see people's eyes and heads. You could just tell when they start to sense where that story is going. But it's a good reminder. And I say, like, you can't fault her because there wasn't training, especially not that early on. At the end of 2023, I think only 87% or actually 87% of the teachers in the United States had not had any training related to AI during their professional development. And that was actually the focus of my doctoral work. And so she got her lesson on that day. She was a little, obviously upset by what had happened. But the next question I said to her was, so I have to ask you, how many times did you do that? Because I knew that she didn't just have one student. And fortunately, the answer was just that one time. So it kind of worked out.
All right. Rochelle, you know, I know you've got a great background in educational technology, and I know it's not entirely AI focused. So I want to kind of get away from the AI here for a moment, or at least if AI is involved, it's supplementally. But, you know, I as a STEM or a STEAM teacher, you know, what's the benefit of, you know, incorporating some multidisciplinary activities that help to tie in the use of technology and the students learning the content of different disciplines.
Yeah, well, I can say, oh goodness, I bet this was probably 8 years ago now. It could have been nine, but I got into challenge-based learning, project-based learning, and had my students in my eighth grade actually worked with their science teacher to have them use things that I was teaching them in my STEAM class to connect with the content they were learning in the science class and kind of like put it all together. And that was a really great experience because they loved it because they had some extra time to work on their projects, but not all of the students that were in their groups were in my STEAM class. So it was kind of, we were trying to find the balance of it, but what it focused on was it gave them a chance to figure out, you know, different ways to collaborate. They ended up being a little bit more creative in what they were designing because they were using, like in my class, some augmented or virtual reality tools that they wanted to. Some of them were using some different coding programs or tools, you know, digital storytelling or presentations that instead of PowerPoint, which they often would ask me to use PowerPoint, I'm like, I was using discs for PowerPoint like back in the 1900s. So we're going to move past this. But I love that whenever you have the different courses, you know, the interdisciplinary or cross-curricular, however you want to refer to it, that it builds extra relevance and meaning and they get that extra practice with it. And also the other part of it too, is at least in that case, the students in my STEAM class that had been learning about some different presentation tools, they were working with students who weren't in my class, who had been using tools like PowerPoint and slides, which nothing wrong with those, but those students became really excited about these other possibilities for creating, and the teachers were learning as well. So it really ended up being super impactful and beneficial for not just the students, but for me and the other teacher in that case. And we've done that many times over the years, but I just think it opens up so many different opportunities and ways for students to engage with the content that they're learning in different spaces. And they can see, you know, the impact or the connections in the world around them.
So you're like, you're giving them like agency, right? You're right. Giving them the pathways in which they can kind of take the learning that is taking place and find whether it be an authentic audience for it or whether they get to see themselves in the role of being able to share some new tool, tip, or trick that they learned right with their peers or even their teacher.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that in those cases, you know, they could choose how they wanted to share their information. And it wasn't, I mean, for years, I was like, you have to do it this way and it has to be this size. And then students would turn in something that didn't fit into that model of what I wanted. And I'm like, you didn't actually do this right. But then I realized, wait a minute, they did it a way that made sense to them, that they're going to remember more. So I need to give them more choices. And so once they have that feeling of like, ownership in learning, then that increases their motivation, which of course we want, and the engagement in learning, and all of those things really then are super beneficial for students, you know, like you said, for building student agency in learning and designing their own learning path is what I'd like to say sometimes as well.
Do you think there's any good platforms out there that kind of allow students to be able to express that voice and choice, you know, in an all-in-one place, or is it better not to have an all-in-one place and let them find their own platform or tool to use?
Yes and no. Okay. It's like, I mean, I don't know. It's like in between, because for me in my classroom, for whether it's my Spanish classes or my STEAM course, I would always give a bunch of options. Like, you know, here's a list of a bunch of different tools, or here's another suggestion. And then over the years I've added like, or if you have a better idea, let's talk or something. And I've had students come in with their own ideas that I hadn't even thought of. And that was great. But then I've also had students who have said to me, can you please just tell me what to use? Because like so many choices is overwhelming. And so sometimes like working with them to give them a little bit of like support along the way is also helpful. But I do, and I have tended to use a specific platform, like for example, in Spanish 1, over the last, I don't even know how many years at this point, after the first maybe 4 weeks of the year where they're just learning to introduce themselves, talk about friends, family, I have them all collaborate in what is our like class period yearbook using Book Creator. So they're learning, you know, building their Spanish skills. They're learning how to collaborate in this digital space. They're also building digital citizenship skills and being mindful of not going onto somebody else's page and changing their content. But it's something that's interesting and has all these other features. And I like them to all develop some similar skills. But then after doing something like that, then, you know, I open up the choices and I might say, okay, if you want to do a podcast, if you want to make a video, if you want to do a skit in class, and then just see what they come up with. But it's, so that's why I say it's like, yes and no, or it's kind of, it's like all of the above. It depends. I vary it throughout the year.
And I've definitely witnessed some classes, and maybe even when I was in the classroom, was some fatigue that, you know, if this hot new platform comes out, and, you know, I'm thinking of a friend of mine. I was just talking with her the other day, and she was saying, and she's always been a big proponent of Pear Deck, and Pear Deck's wonderful. But when she shared it with the other teachers in her school, and then now all of a sudden every teacher is using Pear Deck, and the kids are just getting overwhelmed and fatigued. And I'm not saying that it's a problem with Pear Deck. I think Pear Deck is wonderful, but it's a little overused because everyone has the same thing.
Exactly. And I have my own students over the years have said that, because often, you know, I'm trying a lot of different tools in my classroom, and then I'm sharing them with other teachers, because in my school, we hadn't had a tech coach. So people would, the other teachers would often ask me for some ideas, or I would do a PD session. Or even years ago, I had some of my students do the PD sessions for the teachers. And then the students would come in at varying times and say, did you tell, you know, Mr. or Mrs. or Miss, and then the name, about this tool? I'm like, maybe, why? And they went, well, now that's all they're using, or something. And like, thanks a lot. I'm like, but you like that game, or you like, you know, Pear Deck or Nearpod or any of the tools that are out there. And they said, we do, but we don't want to use them all the time. And I'm like, well, you know, isn't it a nice change in that class? But you're right. Like, if everybody starts using the same thing all the time, then it's not like a novelty anymore. It might not be as engaging as it once was.
Yeah, there's a couple of different challenges that were mentioned there, actually, because you have, it's like, there is no shortage of tools. There are so many tools and several different categories of tools that we have available to us. But then it's like, the challenge is sifting through all that to find what's going to be the most useful for whatever you're working on with students. And then, like you just mentioned too, like, then you have the overuse aspect too. Like, yeah, it was great for a time, but if it's the only thing that's used, it loses its novelty, like you said, or, you know, you're not incorporating other things that could be of benefit as well. But so then, as far as, we talked a bit about, you know, students and how you use things in education, STEAM, different ideas, creating student agency. If you're just thinking about yourself, what is it that drives you towards a topic to explore? If, you know, you have your hat in so many different areas, like we talked about earlier. So how do you kind of balance all that and figure out what topic to attack?
That's a great question. I will say that when I started using tech more in my class, the reason I did that, and I've told this story to a lot of people, even with AI, you know, no matter what it is, I said, for me, when I started, I looked at my classroom and I noticed that there was this disconnect. And this goes back many years ago at this point, probably 15 years ago now, I would imagine. And I had students who would be absent. They would come in while I was teaching and I would be standing in front of my room, and then there's all of a sudden, you know, you could feel somebody standing right here next to you, and they're like, hi, I was absent yesterday. Did I miss anything? And you're like, no, nothing. We took a nap. Now, of course you missed something, but like, you didn't have the time to tell them, or they would come in after school and you weren't there, you were in a meeting or something. And so I thought, well, there has to be a better way for students to be, you know, informed, or if they're absent, to stay connected with them. And so I did like a Google search, and I found this messaging app. It was called Celly, C-E-L-L-Y, which it's not around anymore. But I just started with that. And that made a huge difference, because I could send messages to the students, the families could see it. And then I started to just add one thing at a time, when I would identify like a certain need. If students weren't retaining, you know, the vocabulary or the grammar or whatever it was that I was teaching, you know, back in 2014, Kahoot came out. So I remember the first day that I like made all the games for the students, and I still to this day feel like I have palpitations in my heart from that day with how intense they were playing that. But I always look at either what's going on in my classroom, like are students not remembering what I'm teaching them? Do they not seem to be engaged in the learning? Or for me, is it something that I've taught so many different times in so many different ways and I need new ideas? Then I try to find a tool or something or a different strategy, even not so much even a tool that will hopefully make a difference. And I try that and go with that for a little bit. And I always ask students for feedback, and they are usually pretty honest with me and say like, oh, that was the best idea ever. Or why did you decide to do that? Or anything in between. But I value that that feedback they give me, because we need that just like students need feedback to grow and learn. So I usually use that as, you know, my guide for deciding when or how to use different technology or choose a different strategy.
Yeah, and with the like learning new technology, from what you're saying, I kind of gathering like at least some of it is based out of necessity, right? There's mm-hmm. certain things that come about that, okay, now I have to learn or gravitate towards this tool because right. now it's becoming apparent that we need to be using it in some way, or like my students are using it. And I know we just talked about all the different tools, and Jeremy and I do tutorials, but it's like, there's no way we can ever stay on top of all the different tools that are yeah. there. So when you're trying to learn new technology, is it solely out of necessity, or how do you usually approach that with, you know, when you're teaching and everything, how do you yeah. do that?
Yeah. Well, for me, because of the work I do, you know, in the classroom, out of the classroom, anytime I have a long list of different things, different tools that I've read about, or even strategies also. And I tend to just dive in and try something and just to get the feedback, because since I do go to a lot of different conferences or I provide professional development, sometimes I walk into a session and you know, everybody already knows about that tool. I'm like, okay, great. Now I need a backup plan. But I've always been very curious about the possibilities. So that's usually what draws me in a lot, is just, okay, let me see how this works, get the feedback from the students. And, you know, especially if it's something different that is, you know, new. There are a lot of, as we know, very similar tools that are out there, a lot of game-based learning tools, interactive tools. And if I find something that's, you know, maybe a little bit different, then I tend to just dive in and try it, because it may not work well for my students in my classroom after kind of we go through feedback, but it might be something that I can then share an idea with one of my colleagues or friends and say, hey, like you're looking for something new. This might actually be better for you than it was for me. So I always take advantage of any learning opportunity that I can when it comes to technology or just any type of different strategy for use in the classroom.
And we know too that like everybody in the ed tech space has a backlog of things that they need to check out still, right? It's oh, like yeah. you have this long list of the things you haven't checked out yet, and you need to get to them.
Definitely.
But is there any connections to like with what you're doing when you, because you do have several books. So does that just naturally follow when you're looking at these different topics and you're learning these different tools? Is that just your opportunity as well to write those books because you're kind of deep in that, or how do you do that?
Yeah, sometimes a little bit. Like I should probably backtrack. Before writing the books, I was writing blogs, and that was easy. I was just writing about what I was doing in my classroom. And I remember writing one of the first blogs somebody had asked me to write was for SurveyMonkey, because I was doing a presentation at a conference and I reached out to them. I said, yeah, do you have any stickers that you can send so I could just put them on? And they said, sure, would you mind writing a blog? I'm like, okay, that sounds cool. I didn't even really know what a blog was. I just thought that it sounded like something that was cool, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed writing and sharing the ideas about different methods or different technologies that I was using in my classroom. And that kind of grew over the years. And actually somebody had said to me, why don't you write a book? And I said, well, what would I write a book about? And they said, well, you're using all of these different tools and, you know, you're going to conferences with students, like you have a lot of material. So I thought, okay. And so I did start to write the books, different books, but some of them have been about things that I have done in my classroom, and there are topics that maybe educators are looking for some guidance in or some different tools or strategies for their classroom to kind of mix things up a little bit. And so I just sharing my experience in the hopes that it gives somebody else an idea that might just be like that one idea that they've been looking for. So that's part of it. The other part of it is I tend to explore topics and then I want to learn more about them. And maybe it's for a blog, or maybe it's for, you know, an idea for a part of a book in the future. We'll see. Then I do a little bit of research and try to find out as much as I can. And I think about, oh, is this something that could become part of a book, or is there a need for this? Because I really do enjoy the writing and the researching part of it. So I'll take every opportunity that I can get for it.
And one of those books, and I know we've touched on it, and that I mentioned that it's over your shoulder if people are watching this. In How to Teach AI, and I remember picking that up, I think, at an ISTE conference a couple of years ago, or not this summer, but the summer before.
Yeah.
Where that one would have been Denver, maybe.
Yes.
Yep. And bringing that back and taking in a look at it, you know, you have one section in there that is about the best practices of teaching AI. And in it, you list several do's and don'ts, mm-hmm. you know, and you have, I don't know, there's probably 10, 12 different ones for each one. But are there a couple that you think if you were to you know, present that to a group of teachers tomorrow at a workshop, what are the top three don'ts and the top three do's that you think you would point out to them?
Yeah, well, these may be slightly different than in the book.
That's the thing that about putting something into writing, right? It's now old.
Yeah,
and it hits you hit the publish button, you know.
It is. And that's the scary thing about writing about, I mean, AI, of course, and other emerging technologies, but that is something that I was very conscious about when I was writing the book. And ironically, I started writing the book years before it came out. And fortunately, I stopped because I decided to enter the doctoral program, because if I didn't, I would have missed ChatGPT and everything else. And it would definitely be way outdated at this point. But some of the don'ts that I say, and this is across the board, is like training. And that is for, you know, for teachers, for students, to give them guidance on how to use the tools first. The other thing is make sure, you know, don't dive into using a tool as a teacher without looking at, like we talked about before, you know, is it in compliance with what it needs to be in compliance with? Has it been up to date? And not that you have to be an attorney to go and read through all the legalese, but like, look and see, was it updated this year, you know, in the last couple of months or 6 months, or was it not updated since 2023, because then that's a problem. And then another don't is don't just, you know, don't use tech just for the sake of using tech is another one, because like there's other ways to go about, you know, giving students opportunities for learning. But the do's are, one, do embrace some type of AI in the classroom. And even with the youngest learners, because there's a concern, a lot of elementary teachers, understandably, express concern that, you know, the over-reliance on technology or getting students to use technology at such a young age and then continuing to be on the screens, you know, you don't necessarily want that. But there's opportunities to teach about AI that don't involve the technology, where you're having the conversation. So do have moments where you involve all students of all grade levels and different content areas to talk about AI and learn about how to use it. Use it in a way that's going to enhance and not replace learning. And I would say definitely model for students how to use it. I'm going to add another one too. Like, be transparent if you are using it, because in my class, I know about 2 years ago, I told my students, here are 10 ideas for a project. 7 are mine. 3 are courtesy of ChatGPT. And they could actually tell the ones that were not made up by me. And they said, you make up some kind of bizarre ones sometimes, but they said, these ones are really kind of odd, even for you. And I went, well, thank you for letting me know that.
Was that a compliment? I'm not sure.
I know. I still, you know, even 2 years out, I'm still kind of questioning that one. But I turned it right back on them and I said, and just like you were able to tell that which ones I use it for, teachers can actually tell when you use tools like AI or ChatGPT in this case as well. So I think, you know, you do have to have fun with it. You do have to see the potential in it and find some tools that will be beneficial, which there, like we've been saying, you know, there's so many ones out there, but you don't have to use all of them. You know, find something that's going to make a difference in your classroom. You know, if you want students to talk with somebody that's a famous historical character, like that's an option. They need a custom tutor, that's an option. Or there are so many platforms that have AI embedded in them already and have had AI embedded in them that you may not even realize that you've already been using things with AI for years. It's just, it's been programmed to do the thing that it does well and life is great.
So you have that teacher that's, you know, and maybe that teacher's even down the hall from you in your building. And that teacher knows you're a very tech forward educator and that you have no problem with your STEAM students integrating technology and having your students, you know, use AI in that safe and effective, ethical manner. Right. Mm-hmm. But that teacher is a little more hesitant about that. You know, is there something that you can share with them to get them to feel less, I don't know, apprehensive? You know, maybe be a little bit more risk forward.
Yeah. And, that you asking me, that reminds me of a training that I did a few months ago. And I remember waiting outside the door of the school and it was on AI. And I was speaking with a lovely woman who was just so kind and complimentary and everything. But the first or second thing that she said after she introduced herself to me was, just want to let you know, I don't plan on using anything with AI at all. I was like, okay, so the next 6 hours are going to be kind of interesting because it's all about AI. And I said, okay, well, why? And her reasoning was that she didn't see how it would be of benefit to her in her role. And I won't say what her role is. And it's not anybody that I work with or anybody in this state for that matter, but we walked down the hall together. And we're doing some activities and I asked her for something that happens in her room that is either a challenge or something that she wishes was a little bit different. And it's kind of funny, but her answer was, the lids are always left off of the glue sticks. And I said, okay, so we're going to work with that. And I made a prompt in ChatGPT about a lesson and guidelines and some other things about like glue sticks. And it really quickly generated, you know, all of this information for use to remind people of how to use glue sticks in an appropriate manner, what to do, what not to do. It even made the, you know, the image, although the image wasn't perfect, but it was pretty cute. And I just watched the face like go from to like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. You know, because the time had been spent trying to think about what to put into this room to get the kids to put the lids on the, or the caps on the glue sticks. And that for her was a game changer. She's like, I never thought of anything like that. Like I was just thinking that it was, well, not useful for me, but other people could find use in it. And I said, well, there you go. And so I shared that with her. And so my advice, I always think, you know, there has to be something that is either super time consuming, like I said before, it's challenging. You've taught it so many times in so many different ways that you might even be bored of it and you need some new ideas. You need a thought partner. You want to run an idea past somebody and there's nobody around because you know how the days get in a school. Like, you may not even see your neighbor and you're in a small school for like a week. You're like, oh, hey, you are still here. Like I haven't seen you in a while. And you might just need an answer really quickly. Mindful that you are talking to AI, but mm-hmm. something that's going to generate some quick ideas, it can be that simple. So you can use it for any number of things. And even if not professionally, do something fun personally. I had somebody told me that, you know, open up the fridge. I have these ingredients. What can I make? You know, just to see what the potential is. And I had told her, we have to stop thinking that it's about us at this point because AI is the number one skill in demand and the students need to know how to use it in safe, ethical, and responsible ways. And we're the people that are going to help them to get there. And so even if we don't want to give it a big old hug, like we still have to be like, okay, I'm acknowledging that you are here and you exist. And I'm going to do my best to teach my students how to use it in a way that's, you know, purposeful and safe.
Do you think just prompt engineering still lie at the heart of working with AI? And to steal from your book, clear, concise, and specific.
Yeah. So that's kind of funny. I do say clear, concise, and specific. There's lots of frameworks out there.
Mm-hmm.
One of which was ASAP. And I ask this all the time, like, when I say ASAP, what comes to mind?
Do it fast.
Yeah.
Do it now.
I'm like, you can't take that one. Like, that one's been taken. It's as soon as possible. And you can't take as specific as possible. But even with me saying concise, sometimes you don't want to be concise, but you do have to be specific and tell it everything that you want, because if not, then you're going to keep going back and back and refining that prompt and end up losing time. And the research was showing that if you don't craft, you know, the art of prompt engineering, you will end up spending more time than had you just done the thing yourself. But even though, you know, I do say that is like the essence of it. So learning to prompt is key. And there are jobs for prompt engineers out there as well. And that's a growing career field. But in a lot of these educational platforms, they have like an outline there for you to guide you into that. So it's not like you have to actually do it fully on your own, depending on the platform that you're using. But it's really just about, you know, asking the right questions, giving it the right information, saving some time. And so I will demo that when I do some training, and I'll just say, you know, generically, like, what is artificial intelligence? And then you get this big list, or make me a lesson plan for AI. And by default, it might be a 50-minute lesson for 2 days. Like, you don't know. But if you go in and you say you are teaching, you know, eighth grade students about AI, they're just starting, and you give it all of the things. And people laugh when I do this in front of them, but then it just puts everything out there, one space, one time, without having to go back and refine it. So that's why I laugh when it's not necessarily concise, but sometimes you have to really give it, like, you know, the exact information that you want. So
I kind of think of it now, because I'm very much in favor of, you know, learning the effective methods of prompting, right? So that you know then when it's okay to deviate from them a little bit when you need to, especially as I've started to use the microphone button with, ChatGPT or Gemini or whatever. And it's more listening to my train of thought, but it's interesting how it's still picking up on that stream of consciousness that I'm giving it. And it's, you know, getting rid of the stuff that doesn't matter that just happens to pop into my head. And then it focuses on the things that are important for that generated response that it's going to come with. So I hear where you're coming from with that, is what I'm trying to say.
Thanks.
As we start to look at the future with AI, what is it that you think is the most important thing or things to prep students for? Because we know that with all the jobs that are, you know, like, we're on LinkedIn all the time, and there's lots of companies now that are, they're AI companies, but there's also, with every profession and businesses, they're all integrating AI in some way and to some degree. It's going to vary, but it's becoming more and more clear that the more you use AI, the better off you're going to be as you move into a profession, because jobs are looking for that. So how would you say, or what are the things that you would list as extremely important for preparing students for that future?
That's the reason we're hearing so much about AI literacy and helping students understand, like, what it is, how it works, when to use it, why to use it, all of those different questions and the potential of it. But also along the lines, and I'm going to borrow this from Kevin Roos, who is a columnist for the New York Times, and wrote a book called Future Proof, which is actually over my shoulder here. But he was the closing keynote speaker at ISTE 2 years ago. And I had read his book prior to, I had the opportunity to interview him after his keynote about AI and about his book. And one thing that he mentioned in it was having to shift from media and digital literacy to digital discernment, because with all of the different generative AI, we can't tell what is real and what is not. And being able to actually analyze and closely evaluate different things that we're seeing, images, text, news, audio, video, you name it, we have to make sure our students are able to do that part of it so that they know what is real and what is not, but also how to, like, create with it, how to use it, that's going to, like I had said before, and I say this so often too, like, enhance and not replace, because you're right, like, employers, there was a survey done I think almost a year ago, and they interviewed somewhere around 3,000 different employers from over 1,000 different types of work sectors, work areas. And about 80% of them said that finding potential employees or hiring somebody that has skills in AI is like number one on their list, and that they're going to be using a variety of AI tools probably 75% of the time by the year 2028. So it's not something that's going away. And so teaching students now as they grow from early all the way up through, you know, their senior year in high school and beyond into higher education, providing opportunities for them to use it and to learn how to use it in ways that are appropriate, that's not taking their learning away, and it's not taking away their ability to, you know, the critical thinking and the creativity and the problem solving. Because if you take all the tech away, you still need to have those underlying skills or foundational skill sets that you should have developed throughout your schooling. And so those are like things that first come to mind when I think about AI in like our world as educators, but also in the world itself.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Is there anything that you would say with being an educator yourself as well? What are the skills or the mindsets that teachers need to have? Because the reality is that they already have a massive amount of training. And so learning AI on top of that, you know, and also just doing their job of teaching content. Right. What are some things that they can take away that would help them feel better about all those different things that they have going on, because it was already busy before AI, and now you have that too. So maybe even if you could touch on like, how can they use AI to help with that process, because there are so many things they have in front of them, and then how can they just learn incrementally, you know, as they go throughout the year?
Yeah. Well, one thing I will say to like the first thing that you said is, you know, I feel like everything comes in waves. You know, we had to learn how to teach virtually, and then like, okay, kind of got used to this now, and then we got ChatGPT, and then there's a period of adjustment. So we definitely have to be like adaptable, flexible, invested in learning. Of course, we hear lifelong learning all the time, and not afraid to take risks, because we have to understand these different changes that we're seeing in the world, especially when it comes to AI, and be prepared to help our students with that. So having that mindset that's like, okay, I'm going to have to, you know, change my plans a little bit, or I may not want to do this, but I'm going to have to learn because I need to be prepared for my students. So that's important. But then the other point is, you know, in the work that we are doing when it comes to AI, I mean, fortunately, pretty much every platform that you would use is easy to navigate. You can create, you know, you can use ChatGPT to generate lesson plans, although a lot of people are now saying like, we don't have to write lesson plans anymore, but it's an option. Or you can use any of the educational platforms to create something and to save time that then's going to give you time back with your students. And what I love about some of these platforms that are out there, I mean, I do like a lot of them, and I still have many more on that long list we were talking about before to go, you know, to delve, as ChatGPT would say, delve more deeply into, but just taking the time to test things out and see how they work, but use it as an opportunity to learn with and from the students and find something that is maybe teacher-facing and student-facing, and see what the impact is on student learning and the information it gives you as the teacher, that you can then, you know, change what you were thinking in terms of like the next steps in the lesson, better target your instruction. I think there's a lot of possibilities that come with it. I mean, I say possibilities and responsibilities, but always being open to new ideas and strategies, because like I said before, it's us that, you know, we're preparing the students for the future. And so even if we aren't so excited about some big change that's going to come, we know there are always going to be things changing. You just have to kind of be open to it and model that curiosity for students, because they're going to need to develop actually those same skills that I mentioned of being adaptable and being flexible throughout their lives as well, because careers will change, technologies will change. And so we all have to kind of do those same things together in the same space at times as we can in our classrooms.
So Rochelle, as we kind of start to wrap things up here a little bit, I'm going to put you on the spot with being adaptable and flexible here. Okay. David and I have kind of asked for some assistance from an unnamed AI source, but to help create some lightning round questions. So for these, you know, feel free to give a short blurb or answer, or if you feel like expounding upon them because you think it's going to bring up a great point, you know, just go right ahead. But we'll do them kind of like in alternating style here.
Okay.
So you've written a book about quotes that push our thinking. Mm-hmm. What's one quote that still challenges or inspires you today and why?
Oh, that's a good one. Because, you know, that whole book about it, there's a funny story about how that book came to me. But one, and it's an unknown, no, I don't know who wrote it, but it's, I am in competition with no one but myself. And I've said that to students many, many times because they feel like everybody's competing. And I've kind of coached myself into thinking it's just me and I need to do better, like for myself to improve each day. So that's the first one that comes to mind.
I like that one.
Thanks.
Yeah. If you could have coffee with any historical or fictional teacher, educator, who would it be and what would you talk about?
Oh my goodness. I can't pick just one. I have two.
Go for That's it.
Fine. So I'm going to give you two. Okay. So the first one would be Rita Pearson, because I think my all-time favorite TED talk about every kid needs a champion. And there were so many, and I've used that in some of the different keynotes that I've done. And just, I remember watching that for the first time and hearing her stories. And even in my own classroom, I remember in part of her talk, she said something about a student missed 18. And she said, well, don't look at the negative. Look at the fact that you got two right and they're on their way. And I just like, that has stuck with me ever since I watched that. The other one, this goes back a little further, would be Jaime Escalante, which was the real teacher from the movie Stand and Deliver, a movie that my high school calculus teacher showed me. And the reason I pick him is just because of the methods and how he went out and actually like learned about the students' lives. So what I would talk about with them would just be, you know, what led you to have those methods and those thoughts and value the relationships building with the students initially.
And I remember that movie also, and I think it was a math teacher that I had that also showed it. Yeah. I kind of thought that they were trying to be a social studies teacher, but you know. What's a student moment that recently reminded you of why you teach?
Oh, goodness. I had a student that wrote me, I've had students over the years write me notes, and sometimes they don't, you never know the impact, but there was a student that I had taught many, many years ago, and I had not seen them since they graduated and reconnected about a year ago. And they said, I never had a chance to tell you this, but even though I was only in your class for about 4 weeks of my entire high school career, I always enjoyed the fact that you greeted me, that we could have short conversations, and just thought you were, you know, a very welcoming person. And they said, also sometimes a bit quirky. I'm like, okay, I don't know if that's a compliment or not. They said, but I remember you telling me one time that who you are today does not define who you are in the future. And they said that is something that they kept in mind their entire life. And that I think it was 2 years before I had seen them, they decided to go back to school. And then right now they're actually working on getting a master's degree. And I thought, wow, you really never know what words, what interactions are going to make a big difference in a student's life. And sometimes there might just be one student and you may be the only person that is having an interaction with them on a daily basis. And you might never know what that means to them. And of course, what that means to you as the teacher as well, because it goes both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next one is, what is one tech fad educators should stop chasing?
Oh, goodness. that's a tough one. I might have to ChatGPT an answer to this one. No, I would say stop chasing this is not meant to be mean. I'll say that is often, and myself included, I will hear about some new tool, and I will go and spend all kinds of time diving into this new tool and forget about other things that I've been using in my classroom that have worked really, really well. Invest too much time in that new thing because I heard from somebody else that it did something great or amazing, and I believe them and spent way too much time. So my recommendation and what I've taught myself is go and look at the website and check out and see if there's examples or look on social media just to get an idea about it. And then give it some time to think about first before diving in, because the reason being is it may be something that then ends up leading to kind of like an overwhelm of the technology, like we had spoken about earlier, for students or families supporting them. And so I always say, like, you know, be excited to try things, but maybe hold back a little bit with maybe releasing it to students or using it with students.
Oh, I think that's great advice. How about this one? Complete this thought. AI will make teaching more blank.
Interesting. That's a terrible answer.
It's an interesting answer.
It is an interesting answer. No, maybe, I don't know. I don't want to say more effective, because, you know, we've been able to be effective teachers or personalized learning for years. So I'm going to stick with my answer. Interesting, because that's what came to mind first.
Sure.
All right. And here's our last one. Which emoji best describes your teaching style?
And my options are, let's see. Probably a face with one eye, like, you know, with the one with the tongue sticking out, like, oh my goodness, like just things going on everywhere. And the reason I say that is just because with me, what you see is what you get. So sometimes things might be a little bit of look like chaos, but there is actually purpose and underlying purpose involved. But I do like to have fun with students or with educators that I'm working with. And so, laugh and just enjoy the moment. And so probably something around that. It would definitely be something involving smile. Although if it's a Friday, it could be, you know, a half sleepy smile, maybe.
Rochelle, we want to thank you so much for your time. It's been a great conversation. We've really enjoyed having you on our podcast. Before we do let you go, is there anything that you have going on that you want to promote, that you want to plug, a new book, a new presentation, a conference, or whatever that you would like to give a little shout out to?
Yeah. So I do have a keynote coming up in November in Springfield, Illinois. So it's at IETC. So I'm excited about that. We'll focus on my Thrive framework. And I have a book on the back burner that I need to get back to, and it's around cybersecurity. So I have those and some other work with some schools coming up, but I don't know, that pretty much covers it. And podcasting as well, just like we are here. How could I forget that one? But just keep them busy with that and my own learning and reading. I've been reading a book for pretty much the entire summer until now, because I think it's like 600 pages, but it's on agentic AI and it's fascinating. So you can't read it fast. You have to like read a little bit and like process and think and then test it out. So.
And where can people reach you or follow you?
I'm very consistent on a lot of the different platforms. It's my handle on a lot of them is RDENE915. And my blog, if you put the www and the .com around that, you'll find it. And if you want to email me, just add a Gmail at the end. And I'm also on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, we'll be sure to link those in the show notes so that people can reference them.
Thank you.
Once again, just really appreciate having you.
Yeah, I appreciate you both having me on here as well. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Rochelle.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Integrate This. Want to take your learning further? Head over to our YouTube channel for quick tutorials, deep dives, and more EdTech tips you can use right away. Don't forget to subscribe and catch new podcast episodes every Thursday on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, keep exploring, keep innovating, and keep integrating this.